You're listening to the Hammer Horror Podcast.
The Satanic Rites of Dracula.
So welcome back for the second part of our discussions on Satanic Rites of Dracula. We've spoken about the movie in a little bit of detail about the plot. Thoughts on the movie? We'll go around the table. Meredith?
Thoughts on the movie? It was very much to me a sequel to our previous film.
Mm-hmm. Dracula AD 1972?
Indeed it was. Obviously the swap scene for Jessica.
Yes.
With the lovely Joanna Lumley, who I was very happy to see.
Yes.
Apart from that though, the film was a bit all over the place for me, I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid, it's true.
I read on the internet some Christopher Lee's responses to it, and I think I'm a bit on the same page as Mr. In that I think it was one of those franchises that had just got to that stage where they were churning them out.
Was this his last one?
This was. I was about to say that. This is actually his curtain call for the role of Dracula in a Hammer vehicle.
I just saw something this guy.
No worries. So Miles is just picking up a bit of energy for those people at home. Just to clarify again, we're in the nurse's station, is it? No, it's the hospital. We've already experienced, again, a bit of a to and fro, particularly from a spirit, which we aren't able to talk about. But if you do come along to the Extreme Ghost Tours, you can find out for yourself about who this person is.
So
it's definitely got all of our attention. With Christopher Lee, his last turn in the film as Dracula, as I said. Ant, your thoughts on the movie?
The last movie I saw was the second film, I think.
Dracula, Prince of Darkness?
Yeah, so I've taken a bit of a leap, chronologically speaking. So to me, it was a huge thing. It was like, oh, boobies. And
this was another reason why I haven't had you kind of taken part in this, because I really wanted somebody that had seen what I called the old school formula movies and then jumping straight to what happened to that formula down the track and to the extremes it went. So was there anything that stood out for you at all? Or
It just struck me as they were trying to modernise it for that time.
Yeah.
And it was the 70s.
Very much so.
And all I think that was going on as groovy in the 70s was in the film.
Espionage for this.
The spy thing kind of a bit weird.
That's right.
And
all
the
other
things we talked about take my tea, take my coffee. That's what they're expected to do.
A little Citizen Kane-esque at the beginning with the investigation, sort of reviewing the footage, and almost like it was like Citizen Kane meets Spooks meets
weird. That bit where they were listening to the recorded footage too, was quite. Yeah, I like that moment. Peter Cushing was listening back to the audio tape of the victim and him trying to recount what had happened to him, and then there was lots of screaming and it was cool. Miles, any other thoughts that you want to bring to the table?
I think it was beautifully shot. Like the cinematography was amazing. Obviously, the cinematographer was the guy who did shot Badlands and Poor Cow. And did a stack of
Aussie
films as well.
Yeah, he'd become a bit of a at this point, like I said to Meredith in the last podcast, you really look at it's interesting looking at the Dracula franchise, because you can really kind of split right down the middle, and kind of one end is like more old school and the other end is this kind of, I guess, wild and frenzied view. And the difference in between cinematography and direction is evident when you kind of weigh them both up next to each other. I, on the whole, my view of the movie is that it was really convoluted. I really felt it was a good premise, and they really didn't nail it. Yeah, I struggled with it too, and I to echo what Meredith was saying is that you can kind of see why this was Christopher Lee's last turn at the role. But let's talk about the players of the piece. So we've got Christopher Lee. Let's talk about him, because this is his final moment. As Dracula in the franchise, what do we think? Did he pay service to the role of Dracula in this one, or you think his hands were too tied and he's just turning up with the give me the money and
okay? They didn't really, didn't they? He just was just going for the motions.
The whole Italian / Jamaican / Chinese, I don't know, character. I mean, that scene was just
that
scene
was hysterical. Yeah, and that was the thing that got me, and the lighting and the actual convoluted way of getting to touch the mobile. The other thing I did, I do remember the fire thing. They were literally walking very close to the fire.
Yeah,
because it was all done in wide shot.
Yeah, that's the, and just talking about the climax.
Climax of the film, and that struck me because in this totally litigious age and of being people being really safe, they wouldn't have been allowed to do that. But I'm thinking at the time, holy crap, he's running through the set and it's on fire.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He goes very close to the flame, so I did like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I felt that it was a bit of a paint by numbers performance. He's been paid because by this point he is Dracula, you know, and so and from then cinema movie going audience would still pay to see him in that role because he'd made it his own. And very much for doing the legwork early on, you know, and it could kind of he could afford to arguably rest on his laurels at this stage.
I think there was definitely some going through the motions, but at the same time, it's Christopher Lee playing Dracula.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
It was still great.
Indeed. Well, let's talk also about the other Hammer regular, Peter Cushing, turning up again as Lorimer Van Helsing. I've said countless times in this podcast, I've now done all nine films, and I really like the guy, Van Helsing, Doctor Who,
yeah,
you know, whatever, Grand Moff Tarkin, yeah. I've always admired him as a actor and his style and presence that he brings to a movie, and you look at his performance as Van Helsing from the first movie, where he was a lot more younger, he's a bit more energetic. Does the famous running down the table to pull down the curtains, which was actually his idea for the movie. And you compare him to how he is now; he's a lot more frail, but he plays to that, you know. And I think, unfortunately, I preferred him in AD 72 because I really think they highlighted that more.
And he was a bit more MacGyver in that. Like,
yeah,
he really suited up to get there.
That's right.
This time.
Whereas this,
misguided bullet making.
Yeah. thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
How about everyone else? I mean, like.
All I think is like because he's the ancestor of Van Helsing, yeah, the original.
Yeah, his grandson.
So every time he has a son, he's gonna go, "I'm really sorry about your adult years. Is gonna be really shit." Because that's all
you're
he does.
You're gonna have to fight the Prince of Darkness. Sorry,
now. Yeah,
sorry, dude.
Miles, do you want to add anything to Peter Cushing?
Yeah, I just couldn't understand the smoking thing. He seemed like to smoke like a chimney, but he didn't inhale a single, you know, breath. And I was like, what's the deal with the smoking?
I think maybe it's a bit late for the cool factor, isn't it?
They know it's bad for you around that stage, and it's just like. Stop
I don't know. Was he? I think he was a smoker, though.
I think everybody was.
Don Draper, Don Van Helsing. Yeah, cool. All right. Well, let's talk about. We've said our nods and stuff to those two. They are Hammer through and through, and it's hard to imagine a movie without those two in a Hammer vehicle. I know that it did happen, but generally, if one or the other was in it, it tended to perform. Even the movies like this one, where it's not the strongest of movies, they do bring a lot of energy to it. I'm just going to pause really slightly because I saw a flash of light just over there.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
No, I saw it go across before.
I literally saw it in this
corner. Like a little dot of light.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's darting around the room.
Far out. It just literally caught the corner of my eye. Sorry, everyone. I don't mean to scare everyone that's here.
I just keep moving the lamps.
Is that what it is? Sorry.
I think that's what it is. I think it's honestly just to play the old, the gas probably does make you. It did make me a bit woozy earlier.
I don't think it's woozy. I just literally, it was something that caught my eye. It was over here, and it kind of went like that, and then I lost sight of it. Anyway, let's talk about the other people that are involved. We see Michael Cole's return, so he's the inspector dude that's in it. He does an okay job. Run by the Mill, I thought he's all right.
Was he the one with the white hair?
No. He was the main. The younger dude. He was all right. Mm-hmm. And we also get we're losing Meredith. we also have William Franklin playing the role of Torrance. So he's the older guy. He was in Quatermass 2, so as another Hammer vehicle. But interestingly, he also voiced Danger Mouse in the pilot episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The man is a god.
before David Jason came on board.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of a cool factor. Now we get to the guy I was hinting at earlier in the first part of the podcast, who played the professor. This guy is called Freddie Jones, and he's a bit of an idol of mine. A lot of it is because he's heavily involved in a lot of Lynch films, and I'm a big David Lynch fan. But he actually became famous for the role of Claudius in the TV series The Caesars. And as I said, he was in a lot of Lynch films, notably The Elephant Man. He played the circus guy in that. Has anyone seen that movie?
Yeah.
He also crops up in June and Wild at Heart and a couple of shorts as well. He was also in Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed. He's in Young Sherlock Holmes.
That's your favourite.
I love that movie.
It was a good movie.
And he was also in the TV series Neverwhere, which is a Neil Gaiman book, which got turned into a BBC series, which recently just got turned into a radio play as well, which was pretty cool. And he's also the father of the actor Toby Jones.
Okay.
A few lights dawned on. So Toby Jones, for those who may not know, recently cropped up in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy as Tinker. Was he Tinker? Anyway, he's the guy that takes over John Hurt's role in the movie. But he's also cropped up in bloody numerous things.
He's the evil manifestation of the Doctor, isn't he?
Awesome.
He is Dreamland.
Dreamlord,
thank you, from Doctor Who. So yeah, he's a bit of a... The geeks have gone off on one, Meredith.
Yeah, they have. I think he's also...
And Hitchcock in The Girl.
Yes.
A Bond film, though. I'm convinced he's been
probably
in one of the new Bond films as a baddie. He plays
a baddie. Are you sure?
I'm going to bust out the iPhone.
You have to bust out the iPhone. We're not sure. Okay. Okay, with the last few people, just a really quick, before we talk about the Hammer Glamour section, there's Patrick Barr, who was also in Octopussy, again, another James Bond thing, and Billy Lyle, which is one of my favourite British films of all time. Again, we have Alan Gibson returning to the role of the director's chair, and also Don Houghton once again takes on writing duties. Both of these guys became influential within the latter stages of Hammer. Cool. Well, let's talk about the Hammer glamour section.
Okay.
So, Joanna Lumley,
yeah.
Jessica Van Helsing. Before we talk about our thoughts on her in the role, I'll just give you a quick rundown of her background. So, Satanic Rites of Dracula was her only Hammer appearance. Interestingly, she was turned down by RADA, and that's when she turned into moving more into the modelling industry. She became cast as one of Blofeld's angels on Her Majesty's Secret Service, cropped up very early in British soap Coronation Street. More probably known for The New Avengers, and also was in Sapphire and Steel, both very popular British TV series. She's more known today as, obviously, Patsy in Ab Fab. And I've written down here as well just something that was quite interesting. She described Peter Cushing as the most gentle man I've ever met. I thought that's quite a nice little nod. So what do we think, though, of Joanna Lumley? Obviously, she's filling in the shoes of Stephanie Beecham, which
I know,
was... I know you didn't see that one. I mean, I'll go to Meredith first, because she did see said movie with me. What do you think? What do you think of her interpretation of Jessica?
I think she did Jessica justice. I really liked Stephanie Beecham, but I love Joanna Lumley. So I was very, very happy, despite her scary eyebrows, to see her crop up in this.
I don't know, sorry about that.
They are very manicured in 1970s.
Yeah.
But, you know, she played a very similar role. But obviously, it's the same character, but played it in a similar way to Stephanie Beecham. She is very much the good, intelligent girl of
that's
the
right.
Pack.
I felt
not a complete wet blanket.
But I felt this time round, there was a definite difference, though, because in the first one, I guess there's a bit of naivety, isn't there, with Stephanie Beecham's role, her interpretation of the role. And she...
Miles has gone wandering.
He has. That's all right, he can do that. He's our skeptic, he's our sensitive of the group.
But
he's
just
really
talking, shake,
he's talking about mannequin
really?
Boys. That
yeah, I just really, I keep saying that. All I want to do is go.
I think this
interesting.
Is crossing over to a fetish that Miles.
No, it's really weird. I just feel like an elbow, so, you know, or flip up the arms.
Okay, so whilst Miles is
Miles abusing,
whilst
I just feel really compelled that I should be doing that.
Whilst Miles has gone Andrew McCarthy on us, I'm.
Yeah. Well, can I just ask, Carrie's plates very well and takes coffee very well.
No, this is interesting. That's what I was going to come to, really. So it feels like her role kind of shifted a bit for me, and she became a bit... I felt she became a bit more formulaic, and I'm probably going to argue where you're coming from.
It's a somewhat formulaic
role.
It is.
She does get her hands dirty, though. She does... What I liked about her is, despite all the 70s, you know, yes, here's the soup, you've been out late at night, chaps, and the, you know, let me take the plates... She does also sneak into the mansion behind the police by herself. She does find herself in the basement with the vampires. Yes, she does need to be saved.
Mm.
But she does have the same as Stephanie Beecham's version of Jessica, a bit of up and go.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and in credit she does do that. Miles, do you have any thoughts on Jessica?
He just wants to shake that mannequin.
It's directed this way. It's actually looking at me now.
Actually, that has turned, hasn't it?
Yeah.
No.
No, it fucking has.
It has. It was straight on.
It was straight on in the room. And now it's tilted.
And I turned around and now it's facing.
Okay, we are actually talking about the mannequin that's in this room. And no, that's definitely moved.
Yeah, it has moved. It's now facing me.
Meredith, do you agree? It does feel has turned a little, but...
It does feel it has, but we have these exciting lanterns with us, and they're burning some sort of oil, which is giving me a migraine.
No, that's fully, like, if you look that's dead moved. On this,
yeah. It should be... What we'll do, guys, what we'll do, podcasters that are listening to this, so what we'll do is when Jake, our guide, he's actually left the room because he finds that the energy levels are a bit too intense in here, we will ask him the question of whether that mannequin's moved, and he will... give us the answer of whether it has or whether it's just a lamp in our heads. Anyway, looking at the Hammer Glamour section, so there's Valerie von Ost, who plays Jane. Now, she's more known for being in a Carry-On Girl. And she turned up in...
Actually turned up in
four of them in total, she was quite a regular. And lastly, there's Pauline Beard. And now, she was one of the vampire girls... who gets killed with the I was going to say shower, it's not the shower, the
running water.
Now she was in Man About the House, another Hammer film, and also was a Carry-On Girl.
there's a pattern.
Now a lot
it
of
it really looks like it's facing us now.
Yeah, I'm gonna try and round up.
The gas lamps have their magic.
So, now, with Pauline Beard, now, a lot of fans have actually stated that they wished her role was bigger in this movie. There was a lot of people that liked her. I think she probably did enough, really, to be honest. I like the concept of these vampire women chained up down in this basement.
Of course you do.
Because I'm sick, but... Why would they do that, though? I just thought it just sounded really bizarre.
It just seemed to be Drackey's little hero of wives, and it was just like keeping his women downstairs.
Is that what it is? I just found it really a really strange
thing.
Maybe.
All right.
Don't want to offend our Eastern
European. No, you've already done it, Miles. You've offended all the Eastern European women out there. Actually, we probably have quite a few listeners that are from Eastern Europe, so maybe you should backtrack on that one. Okay, let's talk about the final thoughts, our favourite moments. Are there any? And I'm going to go around the room again, and you just happen to be on the far right. Do you have any favourite moments?
Oh, it has to be the freaking... Whoops, I dropped something. Let me just pick this up. Oh, you touched the Bible, thank you. Oh, it's Dracula. I know, because the cinematographer didn't do his job right. Like, that is just priceless. Absolutely.
Okay.
The best thing.
So your favourite part of the movie is a comedy of errors, essentially.
It was 4:30 a.m. in the writer's room. That's
going to happen. Cool. All right, yeah. Meredith?
I had two personal favourites.
Go for it.
The goons in the vests.
Yes.
That was my favourite part of the costuming.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty epic. They also had really good hair and
they had
really
awesome
good bows
hair.
That they were sporting. And apart from that, a favourite death scene. Cool. I loved the netting, you know, that all very convenient net.
Right, yes.
And then that was a really good staking.
It was
which
a good staking.
You need to see to to fully appreciate.
That's true. That is true. There was quite a few good staking moments within it. Thank you. Miles?
Yeah, I thought it was, the cinematography was great, and I loved the that every gun had a silencer, and they all had different sounds to each one of them as well.
Okay,
so my thoughts, I've got a few things in here just to kind of wrap up.
Of course you do.
I did like the beginning with the whole what the fuck is going on kind of concept. It's just a shame that that thought continues throughout the whole movie.
It had
such promise. It did. I was just like, oh yeah, there's lots of cogs going, turning, and yeah, I'm confused. Okay. I also wrote here and about the scene in the burning house with Cushing and Lee. I thought that was very good.
Yeah.
And I actually liked the makeup, and I know you weren't so keen, but I thought of the time, I thought it was pretty fucking good. I've also mentioned that I liked Freddie Jones as the professor in it, albeit his brief performance. Overall, though, I just struggle with the rejigging of the formula to keep the interest of essentially a new audience in what is dire financial circumstances for Hammer at the time. It really feels like they're clutching at straws at this stage.
Did seem they were throwing every little bit of 1970s raunch at it that they could, and throwing in a spy movie, and throwing
it
all into
which
the pot.
I don't blame them for doing it, though. Do you know what I mean? I totally get if you're a producer going, right, we've really got to shake things up. What do we do? Okay, crime and horror thrillers seem to be the in thing at the moment. Let's set Dracula in there. Dracula's our kind of one of our calling cards, along with Frankenstein. So let's just see what we can do with it.
Don't be a hero. Close the door.
With a bit of concept, I think it could have been a lot better. Cool. Well, that concludes the second part of our podcast, where we talked about the Satanic Rites of Dracula. Just to remind everyone as well, we are recording this at the quarantine station. We're actually in the hospital section. There's been some interesting things going on, to say the least. But we are going to be moving on to another location, which we'll talk about when we get there. Thank you very much.